mixed many feelings, but it's left my heart kind of easy and my body ready to practice with you. And real opportunity for us to continue to, as one of George Floyd's, I think, sister or somebody said, to continue to walk the walk. And in our case, it's to stay awake, and to wake up and stay awake. So for the benefit of all of us, all beings, including ourselves, we practice. And for this practice, as always, we acknowledge that we are all carry lots of sorrow, memories, difficulties, but we, in the course of our practice this evening, we let go of any ideas about what's happening or what's happened in our lives. We let go of all ideas of what will happen in our lives. We let ourselves be immersed in the living Dharma, the living reality, which no situation or story or problem can capture, that immediate and direct experience. And we do this as a balm for our jangled nervous systems, our bodies frozen from spending so much time lost in thought or problem solving, remembering. We just let it all go. Let it melt into the openness of our practice, which is right here, acknowledging that we are aware here, and we would not be able to both acknowledge and sense that aware presence, that combination of being aware and embodied. We would not be able to sense that if it wasn't for this, what the Buddha called this fathom long body. And the alchemy or the medicine of bringing our scattered minds into this body, even if it's unpleasant, to sink our minds and bodies and stay here as long as we can. This we do tonight, and we utilize as our doorway to this embodied awareness. We use this life breath that George Floyd was deprived of. We connect with the body's experience of its own breathing. We let go of all other preoccupations in order to appreciate and enjoy the body's experience of the breath. Now, if you have very unpleasant associations with the breathing experience, the breathing body, feel free to simply rest in and enjoy the experience of the whole body, that field of sensations. And let that be your home base or your anchor. But otherwise, if you feel somewhat open to and are able to accommodate the feeling of your breath and your body, let that be your home base. So having relinquished the ideas of the past and relinquished ideas of the future, letting our eyes close softly, We let our attention be drawn to not just the outer experience of our body, not the idea of our body, but the felt sense. We know the body not as an idea, but as sensation. So we feel our rear, but then that idea melts away and we just feel the heaviness or pressure, tingling. We feel our hands, but that idea gives way to the feeling of contact. Feel our lips and our eyelids until the idea of them gives way to the sensation. Again, we feel our whole body till the idea of it melts away and we just feel that sense of aliveness, vibration, pulsing, points of sensation.
Make it quieter, too.
No need to try to be aware, just be aware. It's natural. Notice how effortless the body is known. Quite naturally, we're drawn to those sensations created by the body's breathing. We just connect with those sensations wherever they're most clear. And we just ride those waves, just synced up, sinking as well as synced, sinking into them, sticking to them, spreading out all around them, not missing any part of the body's experience of the in-breath and the out-breath. Appreciating this breath, this moment. Noticing how with each in-breath, our thinking mind empties. With each out-breath, our thinking mind empties. And as Ursula Le Guin says, this emptying with the in-breath and emptying with the out-breath, we feel the fullness of life, the fullness of presence. And we just stay here as long as that lasts. Savoring this life breath, sustaining our connection. And when you realize you've been lost in thought, celebrate the re-arising awareness. Celebrate the opportunity to reconnect with the anchor of the body, breath. Make no judgments or evaluations. Just keep connecting with life right where it connects. Just this moment. Don't let your mind lose touch with your body. Find your breath. Receive it with appreciation. Let it guide you to a calm abiding. Each breath, as it lets go, settling your mind into the openness of your practice. Just this moment. The path begins here. The path is to stay here. The path ends right here. Let every experience call you here. Sounds, moods, thoughts, other sensations, let them all be the reminder of your love of being here. This unfolding now. in the last minutes of the practice, in honor of those who have been deprived of breath, give your heart in appreciation to each arising breath, connecting with and sustaining through the in-breath, connecting and sustaining through the out-breath. And completely opening to that space between the breaths. Breath by breath. We savor this fragile, precious life. Real pleasure to sit with all of you. I apologize for the clicking of my heater. You may have wondered what the, there's a little background click. When it stokes up, it clicks a little bit, but it ebbs and flows. Hopefully you can be patient with it. I think it might be a good time to share our whatever few announcements we have, and then I'll share what's in, been on my mind, and then we'll have some time for questions and comments toward the end this evening, hopefully. And yeah, so Catherine, I guess it's up to you. Catherine is our co-host tonight. Thank you. And she has a few announcements.
Hey, everyone. I have put, there are a few upcoming retreats with Howie. A half day online retreat on Sunday, May 2nd from 9 to 1. And I put the registration information in the chat. It's called Begin Again. And then there are also a couple of retreats, a weekend online retreat, May 8th and 9th through Houston Insight and Austin Mariposa Sangha. And I think the registration details for those you can get from our website or from the email. And then a day long, it looks like, at Spirit Rock on May 16th. Celebrating Awakening Truth and Community. So I hope you can make it out. Well, I guess you're not going out. Make it into Zoom for one of those. I think I'm just channeling the need to go out. Looking forward to that day when we can all be together in real life. And then as always, Mission Dharma really appreciates your generosity in support of the teacher and whoever might be occupying the seat, and in support of our Sangha. So I am, you can donate any amount that is available to you. You can certainly, it, no one is turned away for lack of funds, so it's not an obligation, but it is a practice that can really gladden your heart, practice of love and generosity. So I'm putting those details of the various ways you can give to Mission Dharma in the chat as well. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Catherine. I think I actually need a short bio break. So I'd like, what I'd like to offer right now, since this is, to me, is a day of celebration of some sort, justice, I would like to take the next few minutes to play a few minutes of Jeff Buckley's version of Hallelujah, because this is a Hallelujah day. And I will share the screen just so that you hear it better. But after a few minutes, I'll come back and we'll have a little Dharma down, as sometimes call it. So here is Jeff Buckley.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? And it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah. Well, your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof, her beauty in the moonlight overthrew. She tied you to her kitchen chair, and she broke your throne, and she cut your hair, and from your lips she drew the hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Baby, I've been here before. I've seen this room and I've walked this floor. You know, I used to love you before. And I've seen your flag on the marble arch. And love is not a victory march. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. Hallelujah. There was a time when you let me know what's really going on below, but now you never show that to me, do you? I remember when I moved in you, and the holy doubt was moving too, and every breath we drew was hallelujah, hallelujah. Maybe there's a
so sorry. We lost that. Hope you enjoyed that a little bit though.
Maybe you need to turn up your volume a little bit, Howie.
Really?
Or it may be that it's using a different microphone since you were sharing computer sound. I'm not sure.
How about now? Can you hear me okay?
Everyone hearing him okay? It seems a little low. Raise your hand if he's loud enough.
Yeah, I have the volume turned up. So maybe everyone needs to turn their volume up because...
We're Mac.
I think it's okay.
Okay, great. Hmm. getting some thumbs up.
So I have many streams of connections that are running through my mind after today's verdict. And just thinking about the long year that we have all been through since George Floyd's murder, and the thought about all the persistence, perseverance, the purposefulness which people courageously came forward, provided information, how much care was taken with the building of the case to then be tried, and how that was swimming against the stream of such a long history of justice not being served in cases like this. And it took, I was thinking of the, today I was thinking of the, for some reason, I was thinking of, it was like three P's, like the PPP, the payment protection program in that's been used to support a lot of small businesses during the pandemic. I was thinking it was patience, persistence, purposefulness, that this, it took a tremendous amount of energy to make this trial happen and for justice to be served. And that's 1 year, but then you think of the patience and persistence and purposefulness that has taken hundreds of years for there to be a light that could be seen that would illuminate the inherent problems that we have in our culture with systemic racism. And I was thinking at the same time about that one of my favorite quotes from Martin Luther King, where he says, I actually brought it along tonight because I knew in the awkwardness of sharing the Dharma in this form, I might forget the words. He said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Another reminder of the long road of awakening, and that long road of awakening to social justice, to racial justice, is long, but it bends toward justice. And I also thought today, I'm just going to share my stray thoughts. I thought today that took hundreds of years to happen. And I realized that an emphasis in how I share the Dharma, what I try to point to and help, if there is such a thing as help, support others to realize is the timelessness of our true nature, the timelessness of freedom, that freedom, the inner freedom that the Buddha pointed to is always already that in us which is free and has access to freedom is always already here. It is outside of time. It is an open secret. So I emphasize this a lot in the teaching. But sometimes what I may fail to name, I hope I don't, but sometimes what may get lost in the celebration of our human capacity to be free, to be in touch with love and skillfulness, is that realization of the timeless truth usually, in most cases, paradoxically, depends on having really, really taken a long time to study the mind, to become progressively more self-aware, to train the mind, to liberate the mind through the cultivation of, at least in the Buddha's tradition, cultivation of the Eightfold Path that is gradual. The arc of that path bends toward liberation, but it's long. But if we think about it as being too long, we may easily forget that it's really right here. That the path begins here, as I mentioned during the sitting. The path, whatever we cultivate, happens here, and the end of our path is here. But only those who travel that path in a really sincere way over the long arc of time tend to realize that vital truth that's always here. So even if you have a sense that you've recognized I sometimes call, and I borrowed from the Tibetan tradition, if you recognize the natural great peace and ease that is the natural peace and ease of your own heart, even if you've recognized that, just as in the case of the arc of justice, we still have to walk the walk, we still have to stay awake, stay fresh, keep practicing. That the true liberation of the heart is gradual. I was thinking today about that arc of the moral universe being long, but it bends toward justice. One of the things that meditators really begin to see, if you put in the time, if you are persistent, if you are patient, if you are purposeful, one of the things that I think meditators by and large understand is that inevitably, if you keep orienting your attention to real time, you keep tracking your mind and body, tracking your actions of body, speech, and mind, inevitably, you will face your moral failings, you will face your bad habits, you will face your mental illness, and I say that at tongue in cheek. You will realize, as Bhante Gunaratna says, he says, somewhere in the process of meditation, you will come to the realization that you're completely crazy. He says, your mind is a shrieking madhouse on wheels barreling down a hill, utterly out of control and hopeless or helpless. He says, no problem. Don't worry. You're no worse than you were yesterday. It's always been this way. You just didn't notice. But when you start to notice, this is the light illuminating what has been obscured. And as François Fenelon says, you only know your malady when the cure begins. If you're seeing it, you're moving toward that arc of liberation. And it was so interesting today for me, and maybe it was for you, to hear the outpouring of thanks to the 17-year-old woman who courageously photographed, bore witness and photographed that whole murder process. And not only did they thank her, but they kept highlighting that it was with an iPhone. An iPhone. It was that light of that camera shining on the truth of that experience that may have, or at least made a dent in the current of history of these kinds of killings, of this unequal experience that Black and Brown Americans and people of color all over the world have every day, that those who don't experience that life would not understand unless the light was shined on it. This is what President Obama said today. True justice requires that we come to terms with the fact that Black Americans are treated differently every day. It requires us to recognize that millions of our friends, family, and fellow citizens live in fear that their next encounter with law enforcement could be their last. And it requires us to do that sometimes thankless, often difficult, but always necessary work of making America, the America we know, more like the America that we believe in, or I would say aspire to. But to just the fact that light being shined so for the world to see had such an impact, it's very similar to the light of awareness turning to see what's going on with us. That process bends toward liberation, toward seeing that this body is vulnerable, This mind is doing its own thing. These moods are like internal weather. Our habits are conditioned by past circumstances. But we don't know our, until we know that, the cure does not begin. But if we really stay with it, it bends toward liberation. And the reason I'm talking about this progress, this progressive view of practice, even though the way goes nowhere, remember, Dogen, Zen Master Dogen says, Buddha is your mind, and the way goes nowhere. Don't look for anything but this. Says if you point your cart, no, this was Ryokan, excuse me. Says if you point your cart north when you want to go south, how will you ever arrive? Buddha is your mind. That's the Zen monk, poet, Ryokan. But the way still must be traveled. And if it is traveled, if you just keep brushing the dust of memory, just keep clearing the path. That's what the path is. It's a place where you can see. If you keep walking the path, it bends toward awakening. The reason I was thinking about the gradual path is a brief conversation I was having with one of our Sangha members who mentioned this story that I told many years ago that someone had passed on to me. And I hadn't read it, I don't think, since 2008. And I promised this person that I would look for it. And that if I could find it, I would read it on Tuesday night. So I'm going to read it to you tonight. And I invite you to just superimpose racial justice, the awakening of your meditation practice, the healing of whatever wounds you carry emotionally, physically, hopefully you'll be able to relate to this story called The Daffodils. It takes a few minutes, so please be patient. Several times, my daughter had telephoned to say, Mother, you must come to see the daffodils before they are over. I wanted to go, but it was a 2-hour drive from Laguna Beach to Lake Arrowhead. Going and coming took most of a day, and I honestly didn't have a free day until the following week. I will come next Tuesday, I promised, a little reluctantly on her third call. Next Tuesday down cold and rainy, still I had promised, and so I drove the length of Route 91, continued to I-215, finally turned into Route 18, and began to drive up the mountain highway. The tops of the mountains were sheathed in clouds, and I had gone only a few miles when the road was completely covered with a wet, gray blanket of fog. I slowed to a crawl, my heart pounding. The road became narrow and winding toward the top of the mountain. As I executed the hazardous turns at a snail's pace, I was praying to reach the turnoff at Blue Jay that would signify I had arrived. When I finally walked into Carolyn's house and hugged and greeted my grandchildren, I said, forget the daffodils. Carolyn, the road is invisible in the clouds and fog, and there is nothing in the world except you and these darling children that I want to see bad enough to drive another inch. My daughter smiled calmly. We drive in this all the time, Mother. Well, you won't get me back on the road until it clears. And then I'm heading for home, I assured her. I was hoping you'd take me over to the garage to pick up my car. The mechanic just called and they finished repairing the engine, she answered. How far will we have to drive? I asked cautiously. Just a few blocks, Carolyn said cheerfully. So we buckled up the children and went out to my car. I'll drive, Carolyn offered. I'm used to this. We go into the car and she began driving. In a few minutes, I was aware that we were back on the rim of the world road, heading over the top of the mountain. Where are we going? I exclaimed, distressed to be back on the mountain in the fog. This isn't the way to the garage. We're going to my garage the long way, Carolyn smiled, by way of the daffodils. Carolyn, I said sternly, trying to sound as if I was still the mother in charge of the situation, please turn around. There's nothing in the world that I want to see enough to drive in on this road in this weather. It's all right, mother, she replied with a knowing grin. I know what I'm doing, I promise. You will never forgive yourself if you miss this experience. And so my sweet, darling daughter, who had never given me a minute of difficulty in her whole life, was suddenly in charge, and she was kidnapping me. I couldn't believe it. Like it or not, I was on the way to see some ridiculous daffodils driving through the thick gray silence of the mist-wrapped mountain top at what I thought was risk to life and limb. I muttered all the way. After about 20 minutes, we turned into a small gravel road that branched down into the oak-filled hollow on the side of the mountain. The fog had lifted a little, but the sky was lowering, gray and heavy with clouds. We parked in a small parking lot adjoining a little stone church. From our vantage point at the top of the mountain, we could see beyond us in the midst the crest of the San Bernardino Range, like the dark humpbacks of a herd of elephants. Far below us, the fog-shrouded valleys, hills, and flatlands stretch away to the desert. On the far side of the church, I saw a pine-needled covered path with towering evergreens and manzanita bushes and an inconspicuous lettered sign, Daffodil Garden. We each took a child's hand and I followed Carolyn down the path as it wound through the trees. The mountain sloped away from the side of the path in irregular dips, folds, and valleys, like a deeply creased skirt. Live oaks, mountain laurel, shrubs, and bushes clustered in the folds, and the gray, drizzling air, the green foliage looked dark and monochromatic. I shivered. Then we turned a corner of the path, and I looked up, and I gasped. Before me lay the most glorious sight, unexpectedly and completely splendid. It looked as though someone had taken a great vat of gold and poured it down over the mountain peak and slopes where it had run into every crevice and over every rise. Even in the mist-filled air, the mountainside was radiant, clothed in massive drifts and waterfalls of daffodils. The flowers were planted in majestic, swirling patterns, great ribbons and swaths of deep orange, white, lemon, yellow, salmon pink, saffron, and butter yellow. Each different colored variety, I learned later that there were more than 35 varieties in the daffodils in this vast display. Each different colored variety was planted as a group so that it swirled and flowed like its own river with its own unique hue. In the center of this incredible and dazzling display of gold, a great cascade of purple grape hyacinth flowed down like a waterfall of blossoms framed in its own rock-lined basin, weaving through the brilliant daffodils. A charming path wound through the garden. There were several resting stations paved with stone and furnished with Victorian wooden benches and great tubs of coral and carmine tulips. As though this were not magnificent enough, Mother Nature had to add her own grace note. Above the daffodils, a bevy of western bluebirds flitted and darted, flashing their brilliance. These charming little birds were the color of sapphires with breasts of magenta red. As they danced in the air, their colors were truly like jewels above the blowing, glowing daffodils. The effect was spectacular. It did not matter that the sun was not shining. The brilliance of the daffodils was like the glow of the brightest sunlit day. Words, wonderful as they are, simply cannot describe the incredible beauty of that flower-bedecked mountaintop. 5 acres of flowers. This too I discovered later when some of my questions were answered. But who has done this? I asked Carolyn. I was overflowing with gratitude that she brought me, even against my will. This was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Who, I asked again, almost speechless with wonder. And how and why and when? It's just one woman. Carolyn answered. She lives on the property. That's her home. Carolyn pointed to a well-kept A-frame house that looked small and modest in the midst of all that glory. As we walked up to the house, my mind buzzing with questions, on the patio, we saw a poster. "Answer to the questions I know you are asking," was the headline. The first answer was a simple one. 50,000 bulbs. It read, the second answer was, "One at a time. By one woman, 2 hands, 2 feet, and a very little brain." The third answer was, "Began in 1958. There it was, the daffodil principle. For me, that moment was a life-changing experience. I thought of this woman whom I had never met, who more than 35 years before had begun one bulb at a time to bring her vision of beauty and joy to an obscure mountaintop, one bulb at a time. There was no other way to do it. One bulb at a time, no shortcuts, simply loving the slow process of planting, loving the work as it unfolded, loving an achievement that grew so slowly that bloomed for only 3 weeks of each year, still just planting one bulb at a time, year after year, had changed the world. This unknown woman had forever changed the world in which she lived. She had created something of ineffable magnificence, beauty, and inspiration. The principle her daffodil garden taught is one of the greatest principles of celebration. Learning to move toward our goals and desires one step at a time, often just one baby step at a time. Learning to love the doing, learning to use the accumulation of time. When we multiply tiny pieces of time with small increments of daily effort, we too will find we can accomplish magnificent things. We can change the world. Carolyn, I said that morning on the top of the mountain as we left the haven of daffodils, our minds and hearts still bathed and bemused by the splendors we had seen. It is as though that remarkable woman has needle-pointed the earth, decorated it. Just think of it. She planted every single bulb for more than 30 years, one bulb at a time. And that's the only way this garden could be created. Every individual bulb had to be planted. There was no way of short-circuiting that process. 5 acres have bloomed, that magnificent cascade of hyacinth, all just one bulb at a time. The thought of it filled my mind. I was suddenly overwhelmed with the implications of what I had seen. It makes me sad in a way, I admitted to Carolyn, what I might have accomplished if I had thought of a wonderful goal 35 years ago and had worked away at it one bulb at a time through all these years. Just think what I might have been able to achieve. My wise daughter put the car into gear, summed up the message of the day in her direct way. Start tomorrow. She said with the same knowing smile she had worn for most of the morning. Oh, profound wisdom. It is pointless to think of the lost hours of yesterday. Yesterday's. The way to make learning a lesson, a celebration instead of a cause for regret, is to only ask, how can I put this to use tomorrow? I think we'll have to call it a night on that note. And may this story, this wisdom of the daffodil principle, may the wisdom of the Dharma that bends toward liberation, the arc of justice that bends toward, or the arc of the moral universe that bends toward justice, may it be fulfilled moment by moment. And with our mind, we make the world as the Buddha said, we are what we think. All that we think arises with our, all that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with an impure mind, and trouble will follow you as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness will follow you as your shadow, unshakable. May all of our actions be dedicated to the awakening of this world, an awakening of compassion toward all the sorrow in the world, an awakening of joy and celebration of a world of goodwill, and generosity, and kindness. And may our practice lead to greater serenity and equanimity. May all beings be liberated. May all beings be just. See you next Tuesday, hopefully. Please feel free to unmute and say goodnight to each other. Wonderful to be with you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Dream of daffodils.
That's right. Good night, everyone. I want to find out where that is.
Yeah, we all do. We're all going to Google it here momentarily.
We have like 24 hours left for the daffodils are gone.
Oh. Well, it's not that far away. Not 24 hours, huh?
We drive.
Thank you, Howie.
Good night. Thank you, Howie.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Howie.
Love.
Good night.
And thanks, Catherine.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Catherine. Sweet dreams, everyone.